VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning, and it's 10 o'clock here, and it's 8 o'clock in Colorado, and sure half is. Of us are in Colorado. So a little bit of a different look for the show today. Anyway, this is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee, and I'm here in the studio, and...
And I'm Adam VanWee, and I'm calling in live from the Denver airport.
And how is the weather in Denver today?
It is actually a little chilly, but beautiful.
Okay, well, that's pretty typical out there for that time of year. Anyway, Adam's going to spend the hour with us with a little luck, and it'll be similar to having him right here in the studio, if not exactly. So we'll cover the same topics and ask the same questions. I will just probably have to shut up a little more often, which might be difficult. We'll see.
Not what you're best at.
And no, but the quality's pretty good. You know, this is a first, as I said, and we weren't really, you know, dreading it or anything. We just, you always have to allow for the fact that it might or might not work perfectly. Seems it's doing a pretty good job, huh?
So far, so good.
All right. Well, anyway, after we've gotten that settled, I want to welcome back all the regulars. Well, you're the people that make us continue to get up in the morning and do the show every Saturday. And if you're new and you just found us because somebody told you about it, or you're on the website, or you're driving by and didn't change the channel or something like that, see if you can stick around for the whole hour. We'll talk about all kinds of fun stuff. I promise you, you will learn something you didn't know by the end of each hour, or else next week's show is free. How about that?
Good deal.
Speaking of next week's show, I have another special announcement. First off, it'll be Adam's birthday. And for his birthday, his wife gave him sort of a once-in-a-lifetime thing. She managed to eke out a couple of Green Bay Packer tickets at Lambeau. And since we all were born and raised up there, that's been kind of a lifelong dream for most people. And he gets to do it. So I'm going to give him next week off. And big announcement, Joe Pippen, the attorney who does the show at 8 o'clock, will be in for his own show next week. Then he's sticking around to join Angela and Howard on the Real Estate Show. And then he's sticking around for another hour, and he's going to do the show with me, which means all of you who have questions about anything that has to do with estate planning issues or whatever it is, you'll get better answers from Joe than you could ever get from me, because I'm not an attorney, and I usually just have to turn around and ask Joe and then tell you what he says. So it'll be a great opportunity for everybody to have a question or session, question answer session with a real honest to goodness attorney, if you are the kind of person who doesn't get up that early in the morning to catch him at 8 o'clock. So
yeah, he's really good, so tune in if you get a chance.
And we work very closely with him. I should probably point out now and again a few other times, neither of us derives anything from the other. The relationship that we enjoy is strictly because we have confidence in each other. So when we make recommendations, we're fairly certain that whoever talks to one or both of us will get good, solid answers, good, solid advice. And the worst thing you can do is recommend somebody who doesn't turn out the way you would like, and then it reflects on you. So we take that responsibility very gravely, as I'm sure Joe does. And you should be very happy to hear him. I'm very happy to have him. And we'll have some questions lined up, some areas that I'm not real big on either. Yeah, it may sound like I'm postponing the inevitable talk about the markets, and maybe I would do that, except for the 3 days we had this week that had bookends around them. But for those three, we actually had a moment when things were looking pretty darn good again. And it's a good thing, because after the month of October, which was on track to be the worst month since 2008, it finished so strong that it was only the worst month since 2011. Yay, question mark is a good one. All right, well, I passed you the ball. See what,
all right,
what you got.
Yeah, it's funny that you said bookended, because I had the exact same notes written down, and we had not talked about that prior to the show. But it really did look like that, because there were three straight 1% up days in the middle of the week, and on Monday and Friday, the market was down. So all in all, it wasn't a bad week. We saw a nice rally after a month of the market declining, and it was kind of as suspected, because the president hinted at a trade deal with China, and of course the world markets and the U.S. market love that news.
Which you predicted.
Unfortunately, I did, but unfortunately on Friday the market kind of decided that maybe that really wasn't going to happen and gave a little bit back, but we still managed to hold on to the gains for the week. So all in all, I'll take it. After the month we just had, really not a bad week at all. All three major indexes closed out with more than 2.4% gains. Now all three are up for November. It's a major improvement over the month of October. And all three are positive for 2018, too, although the Dow and the S&P are holding on to pretty narrow gains. Well, the NASDAQ is still up about 6.6% on the year, which is pretty amazing after the October that we just had. So all in all, October was about as bad as an October can get. As you mentioned, the worst since 2011, and it was almost the worst since 2008. Just to give you an idea, Amazon lost almost $200 billion, and that's billion with a B, in market cap in the month. In second place was Google, losing over $100 billion. Then Microsoft, Facebook, and Berkshire all lost more than $50 billion. So you can note that the first four are tech companies, but the fifth is sort of the ultimate value company, which shows that really nothing was spared in October. Everything was down. In general, though, dividend stocks held up way better than growth stocks, which is a big reversal from what we've seen over the last few years. The U.S. market wasn't the only market that got hit in October. International markets were also down in a big way. The exception was Brazil, which was, they just elected the Latin version of Trump, and they saw their stock market gain more than 23% in the month. Mexico, on the other hand, declined 13%, and most of the European countries saw losses around 2 to 8%. So all in all, not a pretty month. And then commodities as well were not spared. Oil lost more than 14% in October, which dragged down the commodities index. And that was despite big gains in natural gas, a solid gain in gold, and a modest gain in silver. So oil really dragged on the commodities index. Short-term bonds held up pretty well in October, with even the short-term treasuries posted a small gain. Long-term treasuries, not so much, down more than 4% on the month. The aggregate bond market dropped around 1%. So it was better to be in bonds than stocks this month, but still it wasn't good. And then the weirdest thing, though, and let me know what you think about this, but tips had a really bad month despite inflation indicators pointing higher.
I put that in my notes for the show also. In fact, I put in parentheses, bargain question mark.
Yeah, they're at a 52-week low. They lost almost 2% in the month, and all signs point to them starting to pay more. So doesn't really make a lot of sense to me.
No, that one was a bit of an anomaly, too. Some of the other things are explainable by strength in the dollar, which I'm going to address after the break also. And, of course, we had the jobs reports that we're going to talk about. But I remind everybody that lines are open, 904-222-TALK. That's 222-8255. And after the break, we're going to continue a little bit more on the market. I'm really going to do a deep dive on the jobs report, which was reported as being excellent. What's the next step above excellent? That's where it really was.
Super excellent?
Super excellent. I like it. Excellent plus. Anyway, we will have the trivia question as soon as we get back, and I want Adam to explain why he is in Denver right now and his involvement with this organization and how important it is to the world in general. All right, we've got to take a short break. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
All right, we still got him. Adam, as we said earlier, is joining us from Denver, Colorado, which we'll get to in a moment. But first, trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 636-7888, and you'll probably get him. All right, according to the Center for Financial Services Innovation, whoever they are, What percentage of Americans are financially healthy? I'll take it within a couple of points. So what percentage of Americans are financially healthy? Whoever gets the answer isn't going to like it. I don't like it. But
no, it's pretty.
Yeah.
It's not pretty.
No, it's not pretty. Anyway, back to Adam. Why Denver? Why today?
Sure. So I'm out here at a conference for the Financial Planning Association, and this conference is just for, it's actually called the Chapter Leadership Conference, so it's only for people who are leaders in their local chapters. There's about 86 of them across the U.S., and the Northeast Florida one is a pretty strong, active chapter, and I am a volunteer on the board of directors, and starting in January, I'll actually be the vice president, and then in January of 2020, I'll be the president of the local chapter. So I'm out here learning how to do all that and what the strategic direction is of the Financial Planning Association, and there's a lot of changes coming down, actually, so it's been quite interesting, and I'm learning a lot, and I had to take a break to come do the show, but then I'm headed back down to go join the rest of my peers.
Good. And what is it that they're involved with in the short-term future, meaning through your term in a couple of years? What's the biggest thing that they're concentrating on?
Oh, there's a huge sort of renovation of the way that the organization operates. Right now, we're kind of operated as 86 independent units, and they're actually sort of nationalizing everything under the national chapter of FPA. So they're gonna take over the accounting, the marketing, the you name it, a bunch of the logistics, and kind of take all of that off the volunteer board's plate and make it hopefully easier for us to deliver our content and our goods to our financial planners who are members of our local chapter.
What type people are members of the FPA, aside from the fee-only RIAs, such as VanWe Financial?
Sure. It's pretty open to anyone in the financial services industry. There's people from broker-dealers, people from some of the big box firms to, I mean, you name it. There's representatives from all across the industry here and in our local chapter as well. So we get a pretty broad perspective at local meetings.
Okay, so hopefully improving the quality of service throughout every aspect, not just the fee-only people, right?
Definitely. That's the goal of the organization. It's really to promote and to help us be better at our jobs by offering. We do a lot of things that some of it's social and some of it's academic. So we offer a lot of continuing education credits at our events. We just had a big one, an all-day event a couple weeks ago that you got 6 hours of CE credits that can go towards keeping up your CFP. But also, you know, you get to interact with peers across the industry, and there's a lot of value in that when you're tackling problems that you haven't necessarily seen before. I guarantee you there's someone else locally who has, and they might be able to help you out. And that's the type of industry it is. We compete a little bit, but at the end of the day, we're all dedicated to making sure that our clients get the best service possible. So there's a lot of camaraderie as well.
Good. I'm very interested in the whole concept of transparency from the providers of financial services, since, of course, that's one of the biggest reasons why we do things the way we do, because it's the most transparent way to let people know what they're getting, what they're paying, and why. So that's a big one. If you are dealing with someone and you don't know if they're a member of the FPA, you could ask. And if not, then wonder why not. I think anybody who's deeply involved in the business ought to support at least the local chapter of the FPA. I have long felt that way, and I think I joined probably the month I got my certification.
I agree. I think I get a tremendous amount of value out of it, and obviously it inspired me to join and take up a leadership position in the organization. So it really is a valuable membership.
Good. Anyway. Jobs, jobs, jobs. It all started on Wednesday when ADP, the payroll processing people, came out with their private employer survey, which added 227,000 jobs, which in any measure that you ever want to use is an absolutely wonderful number.
No doubt.
You could call it Goldilocks if you want to. Not too hot, not too cold. It's just a really good number. So then on Friday, the government issues its reports, and the headline of the government report is always what we call the establishment survey number. That means the employers that they sample around the country, and they ask them how many people they've hired or laid off or whatever. That number was anticipated to run right around 200. It came in at 250,000, and that just kind of blew the top off everything. And the unemployment rate, which was at a 49-year low already, stayed the same at 3.7%. So it's still historically very, very low.
And you haven't even gotten to the good news yet.
I'm getting there. What you won't hear unless you listen to shows like this. First, Hurricane Michael hit on October 10th. The surveys said that it did not deter the employers from calling in. They feel that their data was very accurate. So it was unaffected, according to the surveyors themselves. That's a good thing. And, of course, that will lead to more rebuilding down the line, where the labor market will even pick up more. It's also going to be a little bit inflationary. So we're going to keep touching on that. Number two. The labor force participation rate, boy, I always have a tough one with that. Easy for me to say, as I say. Labor force participation rate ticked up by 0.2, which we've been waiting for a long, long time. That means that people who have been out of the job market, discouraged workers, they're starting to come back, and they're coming back in droves. Number three, 32,000 new jobs were in manufacturing. 30,000 were in construction. These are not inconsequential jobs, as everyone knows. And despite previous administrations telling us over and over that they would not come back, they are coming back. We are creating, in this country right now, 1,000 manufacturing jobs every single day of the month. That is astounding, and it's wonderful. Those are the jobs that pay really well, the benefits are good, and they create consumers, and that's showing in all the consumer spending numbers. Number four, population was up 224,000. That's the population of the country. The labor force increased by 711,000, which means that those discouraged workers that are coming back in, 487,000 returning people into the labor force, which means that they have reacquired the confidence that if they join the market, they will get a job. Number five, the household survey, which is also the government survey done also by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, only it's done by phone call sampling around the country. 600,000 people went to work in the month of October. Again, astounding. Six, part-time workers dropped 48,000. Those were workers that have wanted to be full-time for a long time, and now they are. That's one of the things that when Obama keeps talking about how many jobs they created, so many of them were part-time because of Obamacare. A lot of those people now with this economy are going to full-time work. Number seven. Annual hourly earnings were up 3.1%, the most in about a decade. The month change was 0.9% on an estimate of 0.5%. Excellent once again. So for 10 years, over the last 10 years, we are now at the high point for all of that. Number eight, U6. That's a measure of unemployment. That's the one that we call the traditional measure of unemployment. U6 was used until, I can't remember which president, thought it was too high and it didn't sound good. So they created U3, where they just forgot about all the discouraged workers. U6 has spent most of the last decade in the mid to upper teens. It is now 7.0%. Initial unemployment claims fell again, and it was considered a miss because they expected it to fall a little bit more. It's so low right now. It's the lowest since about 1959. I don't know how anybody can look anybody in the eye and say that was a miss. It's just ridiculous. Durable goods orders up 0.7%, also considered a miss because they expected 0.8%. You get a 0.7% month in most every circle, they're going to say it's fantastic. Factory orders up 0.7%. Inflation pressures mounting, and that brings us full circle back to tips, which are so low right now. If you're looking to increase your bond portfolio and you don't want to get killed on it over the next few rate increases, take a look at adding some tips to your portfolio. I think you'd be very happy. And the best indicator of all, F-150 Ford truck sales. Best since 2004. That's when people are going to work, when they're buying F-150s. That's probably the best economic indicator since the Caterpillar effect. All right, Adam's going to tell us about the JEA as soon as we come back, so don't go anywhere. We've got to take a short break. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
We have Larry on the line, but I have just a little bit of housekeeping to take care of first. We had a request for me to explain the Caterpillar effect, and it's really simple. Anybody up in the Midwest who's driving around the state of Illinois goes past a Caterpillar plant in Peoria, and you count the number of empty spaces in the parking lot. If it's less than about 10,000, things are okay. If it's less than about 1,000, things are pretty good. And if you can't find a place to park, that means things are booming out there. So as goes Caterpillar, so goes the U.S. economy, and the world for that matter, because so much of it's overseas. So that takes care of that. A reminder, the trivia question is still out there. What percentage of Americans are financially healthy?
And a quick note on the trivia as well. So we had been giving out gift certificates to the Homestead restaurant. And unfortunately, last Sunday, the Homestead closed pretty suddenly, which was surprising because it seemed to be pretty busy. But I guess they just couldn't make it. So if you have one of those and you haven't used it yet, give me a call at the office on Monday and we'll figure something out. It's 685-1505.
And if you own a restaurant and you would like to help us give away some freebies at your restaurant instead, we'll work out a swap arrangement. How's that? Give us a call at the office. Okay, anyway, as I promised, good morning, Larry.
Hey, Steve. Hey, Adam. How you guys doing?
Well, great. How are you?
Doing well. I'm chuckling a little bit because I actually have one of those that I haven't used yet.
I know
well,
you do.
Talk to us on Monday.
That's what reminded me of that.
It's funny. Oh, my goodness. I was actually, when you said that, I started to freak out. I was like, no, I haven't used mine yet. So. Oh, man. So, you guys doing well?
Yeah. Some of us get to stay home. Others have to take airplanes just to do the show.
Oh, yeah. Man. Well, that's exciting about the association there. They got a good leader coming up there, I think.
Yeah, it can't hurt the association and it can't hurt Van Lee Financial. That's the way I see it.
So. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's a win-win for everybody for sure. So, well,
you got something going on, I'll bet, don't you?
I do, and we hinted at it a few weeks ago. It was actually the day that I won the trivia, but we weren't quite ready. But we've got an event coming up that I'd love for your listeners to hear about and for you guys to hear about. I'm the worship and arts pastor at Restoration Church here in Jacksonville, and we are doing a very, very special Christmas program this year. And I'm really wanting to get the community involved in it because there's a need in Jacksonville that I didn't even know existed until I started this project. And so what we're doing, the event is called Messiah for Hunger Fight. Messiah for Hunger Fight. And we'll be performing the Christmas portion of Handel's Messiah this year, December 8th and 9th. But it's more than just Messiah. We're actually doing this as a benefit for an organization here in town called Hunger Fight. And Hunger Fight addresses food insecurity here in Jacksonville and all over Northeast Florida. And food insecurity basically means that the kids who are in our elementary schools, that's where they primarily deal, don't have enough nutrition at home to be healthy. Most of these kids actually don't get to eat at home. And their only meals are at school. Most of them are the free reduced lunch, and the most heartbreaking thing about it, it's all heartbreaking, but when they leave school on Friday, it starts a 65-hour clock where they don't get to eat. And so they come back to school on Monday having not eaten for, 2.5 days. And when you're hungry, your grades, nothing really matters. Your grades are bad. Your behavior is bad. Your performance is bad. Your attention span's bad. And these kids are hungry. And what's really astounding about this is the sheer numbers. And in America, according to their statistics, usually it's about 1 out of 6 kids in the United States deals with this problem. In Northeast Florida, it's almost 1 out of 3.
Oh.
And you would never think that, but it's right in our backyard. This is not a third world problem only. This is right here in the United States of America, right here in Jacksonville. Almost 1 out of 3 of our elementary students are dealing with this problem. And in our area, we're located in the Arlington area, just about every single school, elementary school, is designated 100% Title I by the government, which Title I just means that they're below the poverty level. They deal with this food insecurity problem. So what Hunger Fight does is they package meals to send home with these kids on the weekends so that they can eat and so that they can have food in their stomachs. And it's not just fluff either. They're very nutritious meals, and they're easy to prepare, sort of non-perishable things like beans and rice and mac and cheese and oatmeal and things like that. And the incredible thing is that these guys can send, they package their own meals through volunteer labor and everything. And because of that, each meal costs a quarter. And they send a kid home on the weekend with 4 meals. So that means that a dollar feeds a kid for the entire weekend, which is absolutely amazing. Yeah, and like I said, the numbers just in Jacksonville, just in Arlington, are absolutely astounding. And so that's what we're doing. And I want the community to be aware of this and to realize that there are hungry babies in our schools, and we can do something about it. So we decided not to just, not to just perform Messiah because, it's a cool thing to do at Christmas, but hey, let's address a need in the community by doing this. So I would love to see anybody that can to come out and support the event. December 8th and 9th is when it is. Messiah is a Christmas classic. And to be able to come and not only hear the music, but to give a donation. And we've actually got a website where you can go get all the information. You can buy tickets. You can make a donation. You can see the informational video that I've made with the CEO of Hunger Fight, and that's messiahforhungerfight.org is the website. And you can get all the information there. The ticket sales, they're minimal. They're $5 and $10 for tickets. That's going to cover the last little bit of our expenses. And once our expenses are covered, even the rest of the ticket sales will go to it. But all the donations that come in, we'll go straight to Hunger Fight. The church is not going to keep a dime of it. And so, this is a real need in Jacksonville, and it's an ongoing need. The CEO told me just a few weeks ago that just the two closest elementary schools to our church, to feed all the Title I kids in just those two schools for a year would cost $80,000.
Ooh.
Just in the two closest schools to our church.
Wow.
Now, our goal is to raise $50,000. Now, you might think that's a lot, but when you compare it to numbers like that, it's really not much at all. And so, but we've had some good donations come in already. We've already raised about $3,600, and we just went live with promotion a few days ago. So,
great.
But that's what we're doing. And we'd love to have the community involved. We'd love to have you guys involved. It's going to be a great, great event.
That's fantastic. Adam, can we put a link to that site on our website?
Yep, of course.
Okay. So you go to VanWayFinancial.com if you didn't catch it, and we can link you through. You can either get tickets and go here. I'm sure they'll take your donation one way or the other. But if you've not heard the Messiah live, it's cool. And Larry's got a lot of work ahead of him getting ready for it. I did it once in high school with our choir, and I remember the work that went into it, and I remember the product, and it was all worth it.
Absolutely. It's been a year-long process for us because my choir's never sung it. Nobody in my choir's ever sung it.
Wow.
We've been singing Christmas music since January. So by the time they're done with it, they're going to be sitting with it. But,
so you get 98 degrees, 100% humidity. Oh, I got to go practice Christmas music, right?
Exactly.
I thought it was bad that Starbucks already had their holiday cups out.
Yeah, I heard that on the news this morning. I really wish they'd wait a little longer, but I guess if you run a commercial enterprise or a fundraiser or whatever, you got to get into it while you can and try to make use of it, because you know what happens in the South. The holidays go away, and they're pretty much forgotten real quickly. So get it done up front. All right, Larry, I appreciate your call, and I hope
I hope that the
people respond. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, we're going to take a little break, and then we'll come back, and we've got some other things to do. I've got some headlines, and I want to talk about – Adam's got a little bit on the JEA we've been promising. That's first. And then I want to talk about the fact that in 2019, you're going to be able to do a little more tax-deductible contributing to your retirement plans. It's about time, I think. We haven't been raised for a while. All right, don't go away. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I've got a little extra volume here. There we go. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And for those who are just tuning in, Adam is out in Denver calling in remotely, and it's been working just fine. We're very happy about the technology today. A couple of things. This segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794. Trivia questions still out there. According to the Center for Financial Services Innovation, what percentage of Americans are financially healthy? Bill Hay called in. You all know him from his Saturday night show. And he would like to talk to Larry. So, Bill, if you would, because I didn't have it handy right then, call Alan as soon as I'm off the air. He's got it, and he'll give it to you. Thank you. So if we can get people like that involved, Larry's job is going to get a little bit easier from here on in. All right, Adam, JEA, we've been promising for a month. We're going to talk a little about it. I think the question might be one that's a little bit misunderstood as to what people are actually voting for on Tuesday. So if you can clear it up for us.
Yeah, I didn't look into the what they're voting for as much as more a little bit of background on what happened with this issue and why it's even being talked about. As usual with these things, I recommend that if you want to know what it's all about, just look at the money. It's always about the
money.
Always
follow the money.
The estimates for the value of JEA are somewhere between $2.9 and $6.4 billion once all the debt is paid off. It's by far the largest asset owned by the city, and it adds about $117 million to the city from profits every year, or more or less about 4% of the value, somewhere in there. So if this revenue wasn't collected, it would need to come from somewhere else, most likely in the form of higher taxes. So it would be, if we sell it, I'll put it this way, if we sell it, it's a one-time windfall to the city that could be used to, pay down our pension obligations or other debt. But the problem is that then our budget wouldn't be balanced because we'd be losing out on that $117 million. And so it looks good short term, but in reality, long term, it's probably not very good for Jacksonville. The issue of selling it was raised by, we had this question last week about who brought it up, and it turns out a former board member, Tom Petway, he resigned from the board last November and raised the idea of a sale at the same time. So that was kind of interesting. Why would you step away from the board and then raise the idea of a sale? Maybe you just didn't want to deal with the issue. I really don't know.
Or maybe you're forming a coalition to try to buy it. Just guessing.
Possibly. Yep. Well, I think that the most likely buyer looks like it would be FPL. Mm-hmm. So that's a company that's already in existence. I don't think that there would be a coalition formed to take it private with individuals. I think it would be another big utility that would come in and buy it.
Okay.
So the first time the board ever really discussed it was in February of 2018. But that's only this time around. This issue actually was raised in 2007 and 2012 as well, and both times it was deemed not feasible. So I don't think anything's changed at that from those previous studies. My guess is that it won't go through, but you never know in politics.
Now, so JEA has their employees on a pension plan, as I recall. Is that still true? I know they used to.
I don't know. I did not look that up specifically.
Okay. Well, at the time that I knew that, which is I knew a guy who worked there about 15 years ago, and if that pension plan is funded, that's a good thing. But one of the things that worries me is the city is unfunded by so much, and nobody ever seems to do anything about it. And if they take the money and fund the machine, the pension plan, then what's going to happen is they're losing all that revenue. They're going to go right back into the hole by not funding the pension again, and they're missing $117 million in annual revenue. I see this as a spiral down. We've seen it in our own day jobs where people come in and they have massive credit card debt, so they start a plan to get it worked all the way down to zero, and then they go right back up a couple of years later by doing the same things that got them there. I see this as a potential red flag out there.
Yeah, so there's two things that are actually in the favor of selling it as well. One benefit is that private utilities have a lower cost of capital, so they can borrow money for less than a public utility can. That means that an outside investor can potentially find more value in the utility than the city of Jacksonville does, which makes its price higher. So we would actually get potentially more money out of the sale because of that fact. It's not a guarantee, but it is potentially one thing to look at. The other is that Duval County schools would actually benefit from this. So currently, the Duval County public school system doesn't receive any money from JEA, and that's unusual. Typically, utilities do take a portion of their earnings and put them over to the school funds for a city or a county. From a private utility, if the deal happened, the schools could receive as much as $46.8 million in annual tax revenue. So there's that benefit as well. So that offsets that 117 a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is the customers might benefit. I'm not going to say they will because, you know, how often electricity rates go down, never. But JEA customers currently pay more than FPNL customers for electricity. And it's by a sizable margin of 8.4%. So I don't know if they would lower it if they did end up doing the deal, but that potential exists. So there are some potential good things that would come out of it, but overall that $117 million is the number that really stuck out to me. I just don't see a way the city could make up for that shortfall.
I got all kinds of things spinning around in there, but it seems to me, first off, that they've done a pretty good job. I always err on the side of privatization. Always. Until this one. And I'm not sure. And part of the reason I say this, we've been coming down here, my wife even longer, but I've been coming down here since the 70s, and I spent a lot of time here since the 80s and moved in the early 90s. And the electric service that we had back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s was so pathetic that at the first sound of a little thunder, the first thing you did was run over and grab a flashlight and a candle. Not so much anymore. It's pretty darn reliable nowadays. The only real outings I've seen of any consequence have been hurricane-related. So I give them a lot of credit for the upgrading they've done, and especially given the fact that it's a publicly run utility. So that, I guess where I'm going on this is, from my standpoint, it ain't broke.
Yeah, it's really a tough issue. It's not clear cut. There's a lot of politics involved, and it's hard to tell whose side everyone is on, even because at one point it looked like the mayor was all for the sale, but now I'm not so sure. And the articles about the issue are few and far between in the news. So I don't know if it's going anywhere, but it did make the ballot amendment for whatever reason. And my inclination on those is always to vote no, but I didn't do a lot of research into it. So,
well, as I understood it, the vote that's being taken right now, isn't that a vote whether or not to proceed with the concept, not a vote to proceed with the privatizations?
Well, I think so, but they're always so vaguely worded that it's really hard to say.
I was having a chat with Alan, our producer, right before I came on the air today, and We reiterated the oldest rule in the world when it comes to ballot initiatives. If you don't thoroughly understand it, vote no, because somebody's trying to pull something over your eyes.
That's generally what's happening with those things.
Yep. Okay. Well, we did it, and I hope people take that and start thinking about it, because there is no yes or no, just the way we'd love to give it. All right. The new numbers are in for retirement plans for 2019, and we have changes. Yay. Traditional and Roth IRAs going up from $5,500 to $6,000, and the catch-up contribution for ages 50 and over stays the same, so we get the ability now to do an extra $500. New 401k limits were at $18,500. They go up to $19,000, and again, the catch-ups stay exactly the same, so you got the opportunity to do another $500 there. There are some other inflation-related numbers like tax brackets that have not come out yet, so we'll keep you posted when they do. Now, the bigger contributions for self-employed people are nice, too. The SEP and 401Ks for individuals up another $5,000, or up another $1,000, from 55 to 56. And the amount that can be considered toward that, the amount of income, goes up to $280, a $5,000 increase. So you can't do that, by the way, on a SEP IRA, but the personal 401k for self-employed people who are successful just got even better than it was before, and it was already really good. So some good news on that front. All right, 28% of Americans are considered financially healthy. Or, as I would rather look at it, 72% of Americans are not financially healthy. We got work to do. You can start by listening to this show every week. Hopefully that'll help. Adam, thanks. Have a good time out there. I'll see you in the office next week. Everybody else, we'll be back. Remember, I got Joe Pippin next week. This is the Vanley Financial Hour.